Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you remember during the State of the Union how Trump said the economy is the best it's ever been, and it's all because of him. Everything was great because of him. Now, understand, with this coronavirus thing, the drop over the last couple of days, Wall Street taking a pretty big hit, the excuse now is going to be, well, it's all because of, well, the virus. When the reality is, and I've been saying this for a while, the economy is not as great as Trump is pitching it out to be, and it's not even as good as it was at the end of the Obama term, which is why I think it's really important for folks to understand that, which is why I've got my next guest, Jessica Goodhart. She's a senior reporter over at Capital in Maine. Capital in Maine's an award-winning nonprofit publication. They report on pressing economic, environmental, and social issues, one of them being, you know, taking a look at the two times between the end of the Obama term and the years under Trump, and really telling the truth. Trump's not doing that great. Jessica, I appreciate you taking some time for us.
And thanks, Rick, so much for having me back.
So walk me through this. I mean, because, you know, we hear this frame all the time. This is the best economy. You know, Trump, I give him credit. I mean, I really give him credit for being the eternal optimist and the best pitch man that we've ever had in the White House. But the numbers don't lie.
That's right, Rick. You're right. The reigning narrative out of the Trump White House is that the economy is doing great. The stock market is soaring. And in his State of the Union, right, he said that it's a blue-collar boom. But it's not really quite the case. What we did in our new report is we looked at income growth in the first 2 years of the Trump administration and compared it to the last 2 years of the Obama administration. And what we saw was that in 48 out of 50 states, there was a slowing in growth of real median income. That's for the typical household during Trump's first 2 years in office. And this is according to an analysis that we conducted along with the Economic Policy Institute in D.C.
Right.
And this includes, you know, Pennsylvania and all of the key electoral battlegrounds that will likely determine the outcome of the presidential election in 2020.
Now, is that, you know, dollar for dollar economic growth, or did you throw inflation in there, cost of living? You know, how did you come up with this number? Because, you know,
one would
think that, you know, as the Obama economy continued to grow, because look, you know, we've had month over month of job growth. It's been consistent. It's been, you know, a little bit slower than I would have liked to have seen. But even with a massive stimulus like Trump was able to ram through in that tax ripoff, you would have thought that incomes under you know his administration would have gone up just because they gave away so much money.
Yeah, right. We're in an economic expansion, and you're right. Incomes are going up, and they are continuing to go up. So what these are incomes when adjusted for inflation. So in the first 2 years, median household income grew at a rate of Trump's administration, median household income grew at a rate of 2.7%. In Obama's last 2 years, by contrast, median household income rose 5.8%, or more than twice as much when accounting for inflation.
Wow, we don't hear that very often.
No, I know. So what does that mean? It means that for the typical household, income is increasing, yes, but prices are accelerating at a faster pace. And these findings, Rick, offer a stark departure from Trump's characterization of how Americans are faring in the current economy. And it's not just true for the middle class. Our reporting also showed a slowdown in inflation-adjusted income growth among the poorest households. Average income growth for the neediest households, that's like the bottom 20%, declined across the country in 36 states during Trump's first 2 years when compared to Obama's last 2 years. And if your listeners are curious, they can go to capitalinmaine.com, and we have these interactive maps where you can sort of see how your state is doing, you know, whether incomes have gone up or down in your state.
We'll make sure we get links out so folks can take a look at that, because I think it's really important.
Absolutely.
You know, and to highlight what you're talking about, just the other day I was talking about a Manhattan Institute report that came out that said, you know, back in 1985, it took the average male 30 weeks of work to be able to afford, you know, to live. You know, your housing costs, your transportation costs, your health care costs, you know, education, that kind of stuff. And, you know, in 2018, that number of weeks was 53 weeks. So it's getting harder and harder. And this is the conservative Manhattan Institute saying, look, for working people in this country, things are getting untenable, which is why I think you're seeing so many people gravitating towards Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and maybe away from, you know, some of the other more moderate candidates who aren't, you know, pushing the hope and change like Obama tried to throw out.
Yeah, no, that's a stunning statistic. And, you know, I live in California. I look out my window and I see homeless encampments just, you know, in the park nearby and under, you know, freeway passes. And California's economy has been booming. So there's something not right. This is we have economic growth, but in almost every state in our country, we have rising economic inequality. So, you know, in terms of, you know, these particular articles that we published this week were comparing, you know, specific time periods and really looking into Trump's claim that, you know, this was, the best economy that we ever had. And in fact, it's, you know, when you look at these two time periods, both part of an economic expansion, we see that actually it's slightly worse in terms of income growth for the middle class and poor households. But, you know, we have a longer, you know, decades long situation of rising economic inequality, and you're absolutely right about that.
But it's going to make an interesting moment this November when people, you know, obviously ask themselves the question of, am I better off now than I was 4 years ago? And, you know, because I talk about this all the time, you know, back when I first started working back in the mid 80s, I was making, you know, much more money back then in terms of living. You know, I had much more disposable income, you know, because, you know, things weren't as expensive. Wages were higher. You know, it's just we've really just crushed, you know, the reward for work in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We have a story on our site that's kind of a companion piece about Wisconsin. And of course, that's a state whose governor has directly attacked its public sector unions, and there's been a dramatic decline in the number of union jobs, which has, you know, has reduced the bargaining power of workers. And, you know, that's one of the things that we've seen is that, you know, one of the things, you know, in terms of talking to economists about, you know, why aren't, you know, we're in an economic expansion, we have very low unemployment, why aren't wages rising faster? Why aren't incomes rising faster? And the answer is really that workers don't have the, or employers really have more leverage over employees for a variety of reasons. And, you know, one of them certainly is, you know, the decline of unions. Another that is, you know, mentioned are trade agreements that, you know, that make it more difficult for workers to bargain for better wages and a weakening, too, of the safety net. So we have a lot of different challenges that make it harder for wages and incomes to rise in this economy. And meanwhile, the costs rise. Housing costs, you mentioned. Healthcare costs, of course, are a huge factor.
Yeah, I mean, and to highlight the report I was talking about from the conservative Manhattan Institute, they pointed out that, you know, from 1985 to 2018, wages have doubled. But to highlight your point, the cost of living has more than quadrupled. So, I mean, it's right in line with what you're saying and what you're talking about. And this is a very conservative, you know, think tank that's putting this stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, these numbers don't lie. I mean, they just are what they are. And I think you also see it, you know, generationally, you know, this generation, this younger generation feels they're not as well off as their parents. And so, you know.
No, they're much worse off than their parents because they're saddled with a lifetime of debt because they had the audacity to want to go to college.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and so, you know, this, you know, one of the things that, you know, in terms of this story that we put out this week, you know, one of the questions that I asked economists, I was like, well, why do we see this slowdown in growth? I mean, this is just the first couple years of the Trump administration. We haven't, you know, the policies that he's putting into effect are only just starting to, we're just starting to feel them. And, you know, I think that presidents often take, you know, get too much credit and blame for right. what's happening in the economy. But at the same time, what I've heard from the economists that I've talked to is that he's really, well, for one thing, he's just not acknowledging what's really happening in the economy. And two, that he's really squandered opportunities to help middle-class families. You remember there was talk of an infrastructure investment.
Never
that,
happened.
That would have been an opportunity to really invest in middle-class jobs.
No, absolutely. And I said on Inauguration Day, if he wants to be a consensus president, if he wants to get away, if he really wants to be a good president, the first piece of legislation out of the box should have been a massive infrastructure bill to put people back to work and say, hey, we're going to rebuild this country, not for just Republicans, not for Democrats, but for everybody. And that, I think, would have brought everybody to the table, and you would have had the chance to really bring people together. Instead, they didn't do it. And look, you know, pointing out, you know, what you're talking about is, you know, his policies haven't really, really gone into effect yet. I look at it as like, you know, like a coach. I've never had a coach that's ever won a game. No basketball coach ever scored the winning basket. No baseball coach ever hit the winning home run. But they have lost a lot of games by doing dumb things. And this is what I see. He's the coach right now. He's the one, you know, directing how things are supposed to go. And he's boogering it up.
Yeah, and the other thing that was mentioned, of course, is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which is a major accomplishment. And, you know, that, as we know, you know, largely helped the richest 5%. And the investment boom that, that, you know, that was promised didn't come to fruition. That, you know, most of that investment, you know, most of that, as we know, went to stock buybacks. And to the extent that there was investment, it went to things that didn't really result in the building of factories that kind of created jobs. And so, you know, there really hasn't been, the promise, you know, hasn't really resulted in helping, you know, the kinds of workers that he promised to help. And one of the things that's really interesting that I came upon in this research, and I really encourage your listeners to check it out, is that there's something called the Job Quality Index. You know, the jobs report comes out all the time.
Yep.
And we're never really, like, jobs are really, really critical and important. But there are a lot of really lousy jobs out there.
And
right?
we're creating
jobs
a bunch of them.
Yeah. And we really aren't, you know, paying as much attention on a monthly basis on to the kinds of jobs that we're creating. So we also looked at this time period, these sort of two time periods, and looked at, well, what are the kinds of jobs that have been created in the last few years of the Obama administration and the first few years of the Trump administration. And actually, there's been a decline in the quality of jobs created as well. And so that might, you know, be also some of the explanation of why you're seeing household income growth slow. You know, and you know, there are probably other explanations as well, and some of them we discuss in the story on our site. But that there, you know, that was something that we looked at in terms of one of the explanations for this slowing of growth.
No, I mean, there's a bunch of reasons, and you've hit on, you know, almost all of them. But at the end of the day, I don't think the Jobs Act was about jobs. I don't think it was about the working class of this country. And virtually every decision that they've made, this administration has made, has been to benefit corporations under with this misguided belief. And I'm going to give Trump the benefit of the doubt, even though I truly believe in my heart of hearts he doesn't care. But I know some conservatives who truly believe that their policies will eventually trickle down and that they are pro-worker policies. If we give the boss more money, if we just give them a little bit more tax cuts, more deregulation, more all of that stuff, that eventually, at some point, eventually, it's going to be good for workers.
Yeah. No, I mean, so far that hasn't materialized. We're still waiting.
But you know what the argument is, though, Jessica? The argument is you haven't done it enough. You need to do more.
Right.
Which is crazy to me.
Absolutely.
Just plain crazy to me. But and look, I think when people were polled on the Jobs Act tax cut that I affectionately love to call the tax heist, I think most people look at it as what it was. It was a ripoff. I think most people knew that this was just going to be one more thing that's going to enrich the very wealthy at the expense of our kids' education, at the expense of an infrastructure. Look, had he come out with a $2 trillion infrastructure plan, I would have been one of the first people in line going, yes, we need to pass this. This is a wonderful thing. Thank you, Donald Trump. But that's not what he did. He said, here's a big gift for my buddies on Wall Street.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the things that we also, there's another story that went up on this week, and it really just sort of sheds a light on kind of how broken our economy is. I talked to someone actually in Pennsylvania, in your state, a young man named Calvin Wongas, who's 23, and he's had no trouble finding a job. You know, he worked at a discount store. He's worked as package handler. He's now working as a mover. But when I talked to him in late January, he was working, but he had also just lost his home, and he was homeless for a couple weeks because he couldn't afford rent.
Right.
And he couldn't get enough hours together to pay rent. He didn't want to ruin his credit, and so he was sleeping at friends. He was sleeping, as they say, rough on the street, you know. And you know, fortunately, I checked in with him again this month, and he had a place to stay. But you know, we really can't just celebrate jobs, you know, without also thinking about the quality of jobs and the quality of life. And of course, he was also uninsured, and you know, not answering his phone for fear of bill collector. I mean, just right. The amount of stress was incredible.
You know, all things that I've talked about over the years that I, you know, again, are things that need to be addressed, because there are plenty of jobs out there. You open up the newspaper, there are plenty of jobs. You go online, tons of jobs. The problem is they don't pay much, and none of them seem to have decent benefits of any sort. And retirement security, forget it. You know, when I started working back in the mid 80s, you know, healthcare was something that was part of the package. You didn't pay a co-premium or deductibles or any of that stuff. It was part of your wage.
Right.
There was a pension attached to that. And over the years, what's happened is they've slowly stolen that stuff back. And you know, it's part of the reason why you've seen, you know, this Manhattan report that said, you know, while wages may have doubled over that time period, you know, the cost of living is more than quadrupled. And for women, it's even worse for women, which, you know, I didn't even get into, because, you know, back in 1985, they said it took a woman of a family of 45 weeks to be able to afford to live. Now it's 66 weeks. So it's just getting worse and worse. And this is where, again, I come back to, it's the politics. Politics did this. It was policies decisions that did this. And it's going to come back to who we put into office in November to make the policy decisions to make this stuff go the right way.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the things, and, you know, really important, you know, part of policy, obviously, is education. But, you know, I saw a statistic recently that 5 of the 7 occupations projected to have the most growth in the next 10 years are jobs in the care sector and the restaurant industry. And of course, you know, education is important in those sectors as well, but education is not going to raise wages in those sectors, right? None of those positions require education beyond high school, and they all pay less than $27,000 a year. So there has to be, you know, part of economic development, right, is the strategy to raise wages for people in those industries, as well as, you know, training people for, you know, the tech jobs and those jobs of the future. Because otherwise we have this bifurcated workforce, and that's the kind of thing also that's putting the pressure on the housing market and making it so unaffordable for people like, you know, Calvin Wongas, who I spoke to, who lives in Philadelphia and, you know, trying to find a place to live.
No, it's incredible. And, you know, and again, I look at myself when I started working back in the late 80s. The first job I got in freight started off at $14 an hour, which in today's money would be $30 an hour. That was starting. And then after 2 years, you went up to like, I think it was like 18 and a half. But that was 1980. That was 1988, 1989.
That's a good job. Yeah.
But here's the thing. You didn't need to be a brain surgeon to do it. And there were a bunch of them that were available. It wasn't, this wasn't the unicorn that people think that job was. They were out there. The problem is those good, well-paying union jobs have just been destroyed over the last 40 years. And it comes back down to policy. Just my thought. But I think the work that you guys do, so important. And I hope folks will check out the stories over at Capital in Maine, and we'll make sure we get links out so folks can do that. Jessica, I appreciate the time. As always, it's great talking with you.
It's so great to talk to you, Rick. And thanks for the work you do.
Good stuff. I appreciate the time. Jessica Goodhart, senior reporter there at Capital in Maine. Like I said, make sure you check out the work they do. They do fantastic stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.